October 8th, this is a Wednesday morning, and I'm reconvening this the meeting of the Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee. We met all day yesterday, and this is the second day of the two-day meeting. Today's meeting is going to run until 11:30, and then after lunch, we're going to have a public tour. Those that wanted to sign up for the public tour have already done so. It's unfortunately booked now, so that any of you watching on TV can't get on it this afternoon, but members of the public should know that if they wish to take the tour, we hold a public tour in conjunction with every public meeting, and the next one will be in February, and you should look for the public announcement in the paper or on our website so as to see how to sign up a couple weeks before the next public meeting in February. So my name is Robert Budnitz. I'm a member of the committee. The other two, there's a three-member committee. The other two members of the Independent Safety Committee are William Conway and Per Peterson. Conway is unable to attend today, but he's attending by a remote call-in on a speakerphone that is sitting in front of us. And Bill, if you'll just say hello to introduce yourself, then the public can know that you're out there.
Yes, my name is Bill Conway, and I wish everybody a good morning.
The third member of our committee's name is Per Peterson, and Peterson is unable to be with us today. The other people at the table here I'll introduce just now. On my extreme right, two over, is Robert Wellington. He's the legal counsel for the committee and has been since its inception nearly two decades ago. On his left and my right is Furman Wardell, who is a consultant now. The public can comment on any matter before the committee, whether it's before us or not. And if it's a matter that's listed on the agenda, they should comment it only in the time when the matter comes up on the agenda. If it's not, they should do so now. There's a time limit of 5 minutes each for any public comment that comes before us. But if those of you who were here yesterday, you know that we're liberal on that if it's necessary to explore the matter fully. We don't promise we'll take any action on anything that's brought before us right then because we may not have all the information, but we do commit to look into every matter that's brought before us, and I think we have a nearly two-decade history of doing that. So is there any member of the public that wishes to make a comment? Seeing none, we're going to proceed with the next item on the agenda. The next item on the published agenda is the consent agenda. And the consent agenda consists of routine items which the committee can approve with a single motion because we've all looked at them. You'll know just exactly what they are as soon as we go through them. The first item is the minutes of our June 26th last public meeting, which was 3 months ago, and they're here for approval. I've studied them and already made comments, and I suppose Bill, you have too.
I have. Quite a few editorial comments, which I'd be pleased to mail to Rob Wellington, if that's appropriate.
That's fine. If they're not substantive but merely editorial, then I wonder whether you'll agree with or you'll entertain making a motion to accept the minutes.
I'll submit my comments, but I do make a motion to accept the minutes as amended.
Okay, and I have no further comments either.
Bob, I have one comment.
Go ahead.
Furman, you're not going to go through it. I'm just going to go ahead and take it like this. Page. On page B9-24, about the middle of the page where Jim Becker was reviewing and discussed the active prompt operability assessment. The very last one there talked about issue. I'm not sure what that last sentence really said. Diesel generator fuel injection line cracks. One emergency diesel to be replaced. There's no diesels to be replaced. I assume they're talking about that line associated with that emergency diesel, but I think that last sentence there needs to be looked at and need to rewrite it.
Okay. We'll look at that.
Yeah, I think I see exactly what must be intended there.
I think it's the issue regarding diesel generator fuel.
It's the issue regarding diesel generator fuel injection line cracks. And it's the line, the fuel injection line on one diesel is to be replaced.
That's what I would think.
Huh?
That's correct.
Yeah, so we agree with that, and we'll make that change. Thank you, Jim.
Page was that on?
Be like Bravo 924. There are five bullets, and it's the last of them. The sentence is written in a way that's ambiguous, but it's clear what it
okay.
must have meant. It's the line that is to be replaced on one of the diesels.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah. Any other comments of technical nature? Because editorial things will forward and clear up. And
yeah.
And hearing none, I'm going to proceed by assuming that Bill made the motion. The members and the staff have all reviewed it. I certainly have. I know that Bill has, and Per Peterson I know has too, although Per Peterson reviewed it but was not a member of the committee at that time but still has reviewed it. David Rawson, who was a member of the committee during that time and is no longer a member, also reviewed it to make sure that it captures properly the stuff he knew about when he was a member. And the members of the public ought to know then that we've reviewed it thoroughly. So as a consent item, is there any discussion before we I assume we'll move to approve it?
Bob, I'll make one comment. We've been through two review cycles, perhaps three review cycles on the report. I've gotten all comments in. They're all editorial, with one exception, and it's sort of semi-editorial. And I sent out to the committee last week a copy of the executive summary.
Right.
And that's the basis on which we'll approve it. This executive summary contains all of our conclusions and recommendations. I would add on page 2 of that executive summary, where we list the committee members, Bob, I believe you had the suggestion that we put their terms of office on here as the dates.
Right.
That's not on this copy, but it will be. I will add that. So I would just make that a comment as far as what you approve. Right. Other than that, the report is ready for your consideration.
Okay. So, Bill, I assume that you're going to agree to approve it also. And if you say so, then we're ready to approve.
Please repeat that, Bob.
I was assuming that you're ready to approve the annual report also, as I am.
I do make a motion to approve the annual report, including the comments that Mr. Wardell just referenced.
Me too. So
I got one question.
Jim Booker has another one.
Yeah. Furman, on the second draft there, I had sent in some comments about the details of the areas for improvement. Did you take my comments and take those out of there?
Say that again, Jim.
On the second draft, in one of the sections, and I don't remember what section, I didn't bring it with me, I had made some comments about deleting some of the AFIs, just details that were in that section.
Yes, I sent that to PG&E for review, that page, and I've got their comments back that we need to be more general in discussing those.
Fine, okay.
Okay, so with that additional, I'll say amendment or just being sure that that's in there, hearing no other discussion, we'll agree to approve the annual report. And that's a very important thing for us. That's the single most important piece of archival documentation of our work, is that annual report, which contains, for example, reports on all of our fact findings and all the public meetings, and everything is in there for that 12-month period.
Bob?
Yes.
Could you repeat for me the comment that Jim Booker made? I couldn't hear him.
I'll repeat it, Bill. Is on the second draft, in one of the sections in Volume 1, I had made the comment to Furman about the details that we're going into the info areas for improvement, AFIs, and Furman checked with PG&E and making those more general.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Okay, Robert Wellington has a comment now.
I just wanted to note for the record that the as the chairman said this morning, this document is an important archival document, and this is and it's noted this is the 18th annual report. The process has provided. Thanks.
And like everything else we do, if any member of the public has a comment on it, they can contact us in writing, or on the website, or with a telephone call, and it's all explained how to do that, and we will be attentive to any comment we get. Next item on the consent agenda is update on financial matters of the committee activities during the last year. Rob?
I'll just comment briefly on the, with regard to the financial matters, is that you have all received a copy of the our accountant's statement of assets, liabilities, and capital income September 30th. We have a present balance in the account. She calls it total current assets of $142,906.11. Does not include the fourth quarter payment to the committee by PG&E, which has just been billed. It got billed for the 1st of October, so it's due and should be paid very, very shortly. So the committee is in good financial situation at this time.
Any other comment here or Bill about that?
Could Rob repeat the latter part of his statement? He blanked out completely.
I just said that based upon the grant balance that I indicated, $142,000 plus, that the committee is in a good financial position at the present time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the discussion of issues on the open items list. Just to explain to the public what this is, during our fact-finding meetings and during our public meetings and during just deliberations amongst the committee and the consultant staff, we generate open items. And what an open item is an item that we have agreed together we will pursue so as to make sure we have a list of them and we don't lose track of them. And then as the pursuit leads to a resolution, we finally consider them closed or resolved, if they are, and then they're deleted from the list. But we carry this open items list in perpetuity. There are always some that have been on for a year or two, and some of them that we just put on, and some we've resolved, and so on. And at this juncture, what we're going to do is to go over them and agree together which ones we can agree that we've closed because of some resolution we've agreed to carry on, and who's going to do what to pursue them in the future through fact-finding meetings and the like. Furman, it's your item.
Thank you, Bob.
Now, just want to ask Bill Conway remotely. You have this copy. It's the yellow pages.
Yes, I do.
The gold pages. Yeah.
All right. I'll walk us through the open items list page by page as we have done in the past, if that's acceptable. And what I would say at this point is I've taken last time's open items list, have updated it as per instructions during this same process at the last public meeting, have added at the end, which we'll go to on the last page, any open items from the previous public meeting. Any new information other than editorial on this list is shown in italics. So with that in mind, I would suggest we start with page one. And if there's any comments, let me know those now.
On page one, Furman, the very last one, EN-27, instead of equipment qualification program, that should be environmental qualification program.
Good catch. That's just a
typographical error. All right. I'll make that change.
It's called an EQ program, and a lot of times we call it equipment when it really should be environmental, but it's the same thing.
Chairman, could you repeat that?
The very last one there, it's the equipment qualification. Is it really an environmental qualification program of the equipment? It's called an EQ program, but it's environmental qualification.
It's talking about EN-27?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And, of course, the issue there is that equipment that must operate in a harsh environment, perhaps if there's heat or there's right. There's steam or humidity or something, needs to be qualified to needs to be qualified for that, and that's what that program is. Go ahead. Any others on this page?
All right, hearing none. Page two. All right, page three then. Page four.
I have two comments on that, Furman. The very first one is LD-6.
LD-6, all right.
About the operator qualification program. You have it scheduled over there. This is just a nit. You have it scheduled for the first quarter of 2009. I would suggest that as the members have available to any fact-finding meeting, they should try to do that rather than limit it just whenever it's available to do that.
All right, so Jim, you're suggesting in LD 6 that we just put
as available
in there. Okay. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, and I had one called NR, like Nuclear Regulatory Commission 4. The item is meet with NRC resident inspectors annually. Well, I've been on the committee for just a year. So my first meeting was a
year ago just now, and this is NR4, my first joining the committee. And I've never met with the resident inspectors. I think that rather than say annually, we ought to say at least annually, because whoever else wants to meet with them, I'd like to meet with the resident inspectors sometime, because I never have in a fact-finding the way one does, and suggest that you say at least annually, just so as to if somebody else wants, Per Peterson was on the committee, went off, he's coming back on again, he may want to separately.
Okay, good comment. I'll make that change.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea.
If you'll notice just above that in item OT-5, which is overtime controls, I'm asking if we don't want to delete that item. We followed overtime for a long period of time. I don't think it's a problem now. So I don't know if it belongs on our list as something we need to look at very regularly.
Which one is that?
OT-5.
I'm not too sure we want to delete that or not. There's some concerns about overtime with the operators that we've continued to talk to them about, and I think it's a good idea to do that with the operators. And then also, after some of these outages, these long outages, I don't think it's a problem. I just think we should continue to look at it. We don't need to schedule it, but just, you know, whenever it comes up, we need to do it. Yep. But that's sort of a reminder for us to do that.
Yeah, it's carrying it on the list without any particular schedule. Someday someone will look at it and say, gee, we haven't done that for 4 years, and we'll want to go back just for a check, huh? So keeping it on
that
doesn't...
That whole process is either ongoing change or is about to ongoing change. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
I think the NRC is about to, if they haven't already, issued a change in requirements on those kinds of operating people, as well as, well, you mentioned it yesterday as part of yesterday's public meeting.
I think that's correct, Bill.
Well, it won't hurt to leave it on if you want to leave it.
Yeah, it'll be a tickle for us to remember not to just forget it in the long list of other items.
All right, we'll leave it. Okay, that brings me down about halfway through page 4, where we pick up with items from previous public meetings. I would ask Rob Wellington on the bottom of page 4, item 19. Is there an update there? We're waiting on your office for something.
We have, yes. That's a question relative to providing a basic video tutorial relative to the pressurized water reactors. And we've put one on. It's a PG&E steam generator replacement video, which is now on the website. And we'll have the webmaster look at installing just the video tutorial after we take the video off the website. But that has been done.
All right. I'll note that and keep the item on until we get it completed then.
That, by the way, is related to item 14 on the next page, as you'll see. And that also says awaiting final action by Rob Wellington. You want to comment on that right here while we're right next to it?
I do.
We're on page 5, about halfway down, Bill, item 14.
This is a question of early posting of the draft agendas, and we are, in fact, posting the agendas as soon as we have them. They're being posted on the website. So that's being done.
All right. When might that be done, Rob? Do you have has it been done, or it has been done?
It has been done, and it will continue to be done. That's just an ongoing. We'll make sure we do that. Those agendas get posted on the website as soon as they're ready.
Okay, I'll mark that one as completed then. Anything else on page 5? I noticed there's a couple.
Furman is the January 08 public meeting item number 2 concerning a written description of the makeup water system. I'm going to report on that on my fact finding today, and we can close that out. That's satisfactory. I guess it was a misunderstanding between the system engineer and us about what we were talking about. And I'll report on that at the
So I suggest that if we find that Jim's report is satisfactory, as we're likely to, but we don't know, we're going to have a discussion of it soon, then we'll close that out following that, or we'll just make a note to do so.
I generally wait for the written report to come out.
Yeah, fair enough.
Before I clear these, the final approved report.
Fair enough.
Okay, I'm moving to page 6 now. The last page. I would note there's two items on page 6 where it says awaiting DCPP. Discussions with Kent Oliver yesterday indicates those have been completed, so I'll mark those as complete. That was some information that PG&E was going to provide to the committee. It has been provided.
Yes, so to ask the question about the tanker oil spill issue, is that now, the whole issue is now resolved and complete with us?
Which item, Bob?
Well, it's item 4, but that was just to get that report.
And we have received that report.
Yes, we have received the report. Now, it's my belief that having received that report and having had the at the last meeting, we had a whole discussion about it, and it was in some detail, that I believe that entire issue is now resolved for us.
I would agree.
Okay.
That's fine with me.
Okay.
And that concludes the open items list.
Well, no, it only concludes them except for the new ones we're about to add because things that have emerged at this meeting.
That'll go on the next meeting's report, but okay. For now, as of now, this would...
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments?
I have no comments.
So explain to me, explain to me when we get to add new open items onto this.
Okay. As soon as I get the minutes from the current meeting we're sitting in today,
right.
When I get the written minutes in a few months... I'll go through those minutes
and
pick out the open items and add them to this list, which will
right.
be published about
okay.
a week before the next meeting.
Good, because I mean, an obvious one is we are obviously going to continue to follow the interaction between the San Luis Obispo Air Pollution Control District and the plant. There's a meeting in the third week in November, and we're going to want to follow the how that evolves. I mean, that's just an item that for sure we want.
Yeah, all items like that, Bob, from the meeting we're sitting in now will be added to the next open items list.
Great. Okay, a member of the public has a comment, and we'd be happy to introduce it. Please state your name first.
My name is Linda Seeley. I'm a board member of the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. My comment has to do with requesting you to add something to your agenda, your open list. This actually is from Jane Swanson, who is the spokesperson of the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. And it's about the status, I'll read it to you, and then this is why I'd like you to add it. She says, I'm asking Linda Seeley, board member of the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, to read these comments at the October 8th meeting, as I am unable to be present. I did attend the October 7th morning meeting at which those present were assured that public input to the DCISC was truly valued and would be taken into serious consideration.
That's true.
I arrived at the October 7th meeting at 6:15 p.m., assuming that I would be in time for agenda item number 11, which had 5 subtopics, but found to my surprise that the evening meeting had lasted approximately 30 minutes and that apparently some or all of the evening agenda items had been squeezed into the afternoon session instead of placed into the evening session as the public notice had indicated. You can correctly surmise that my confidence in the DCISC's assurance that it values public input is severely undermined by this departure from the meeting schedule as published. And I ask that you allow Mrs. Seeley to present my comments on agenda items 11 at this time. Since I was not able to hear the presentation, I may want to add to these points at a later date.
Yeah, that permission is granted. Go ahead.
Thank you. Sure. The written report from PG&E to DCISC states that the NRC staff has amended the environmental report. I am not aware of any document by the name of environmental report. The more complete and accurate picture is that in 2006, in response to a legal challenge by the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, the Ninth Circuit Court of the U.S. Court of Appeals ordered the NRC to do a study to evaluate the environmental impacts of a terrorist attack on the dry cask facility in compliance with the National Environmental Policy Act. In response, the NRC staff produced a weak 8-page environmental assessment, concluding that the impacts of a successful attack would be of no significance. Mothers for Peace expert witness Dr. Gordon Thompson of the Institute for Resource and Security Studies showed in a highly documented report that the agency's technical analysts erred by assuming a cask could be punctured without also recognizing that its contents could be ignited, allowing a large quantity of radioactive cesium and other contaminants to become airborne and transported over a broad geographic area. The resulting damage to public health and the environment would cost billions of dollars. As a result of further challenges by the Mothers for Peace through attorney Diane Curran, the Nuclear Regulatory Commissioners held a hearing on July 1, 2008, just outside of Washington, D.C. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yes, we are.
I was present at this meeting during which the NRC staff amendment to the EA was presented. The attorney for the staff admitted that the report relied on qualitative analysis alone, with no quantitative studies to back the NRC staff conclusion of no significant impact. The written report to the DCISC states that the NRC would give a response to the arguments presented at the July 1st hearing on October 6th. They were going to give a response on October 6th. I assume that during the truncated meeting yesterday, it was stated that the NRC postponed making that decision,
right,
and no rescheduled date is yet known, right?
I believe that they've just said it'll be soon, but haven't given us a specific date.
Okay. Therefore, the validity of the license for the ISFISI is not yet determined, right?
Well, pending the NRC's determination. The NRC does that. We don't do
that. If the DCISC wants to attain any credibility with the concerned public which it serves and which funds its budget, I strongly suggest future public meeting. I strongly suggest that future public meetings observe the published schedules and agendas. It's really important to us that you stick to the agenda, because we really do look at it carefully. And in adding my two cents to this, I think that for your own sake, for your own credibility and your own value to the public, that you should really remember that we count on you. You're the independent safety committee. And although I know you have no enforcement power, we do rely on you to look at these issues, because you are our only link to safety at Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. Okay, thank you.
I want to thank you for your comments, and actually the comments, as you said, you're a surrogate for your
right.
colleague. I also want to say that for those watching on television or remotely, what happened was that we finished the afternoon session early. We had some items that were to be after a half an hour break, and we decided to move them up and finish them then.
Right.
And that was contrary to what had been published as an agenda. And we now recognize that that was an error, and we shouldn't have done that, and we certainly are going to be careful not to do that again.
Thank
you. I want to thank you for your comments.
Okay.
And if you have anything in writing, or what you just read to be in writing, you can give it to us now or later. It's not urgent to do it right now, but
okay.
if you do, they will go into our record, and they will they'll get some careful deliberation. About the independent spent fuel storage installation, we're watching that. We had a whole thing about it yesterday. We're going to continue to watch it, and if there are any technical issues that merit our I won't say intervention, our pursuit, we certainly shall.
Great.
Right now, we're in the situation where, until the NRC does its whatever it's about to do, which is to release its findings and so on, we haven't anything in addition to review. But when they do, we'll see them, we'll review them, and we'll come to an independent view about that.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here and for the comment.
Bob, could I just make a...
Rob Wellington?
Just a related comment.
Go stand.
Ms. Cochran was here yesterday, and she, of course, was... concerned and upset, because she had wanted to speak regarding that matter, and so we did apologize to her. We mentioned, you know, this is our 55th set of meetings, And we've never done that before.
Right.
And so we all talk about lessons learned in this process. So I think we have a lesson learned here. Fortunately, we had, it's almost sort of in anticipation. We asked Mr. Strickland, who'd made a presentation, we'd moved his up. Mr. Strickland did wait around, and I know that he made himself available to talk at length to Mrs. Cochran. So hopefully we got, we're able to, try to help it out a bit, but we recognize, as the chair said, the lesson learned, and we've learned it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and now on the technical issue that was raised in your comments, actually, as I said, you as a surrogate for your colleague,
right.
We're aware of that issue. We know about it. We're following it. Right now, we're going to wait and see what our NRC regulator has to say as they go through their process.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Bob, could I make a comment?
Yes, you may, Bill. Bill Conway.
Ma'am, I really appreciate you spending the time to appear before the committee and cite your concerns. And I want to assure you that we will make every effort possible in the future to make sure that this kind of thing, which is offensive to you, will not occur again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. About the open item list, where that's where we were. There's no further issue there now. I wish to go back to item number XIX, which is, on the agenda, because although the agenda doesn't say it explicitly, we really do need to put in there an update on the committee's activities, just as a way of telling ourselves and the public and making sure we're clear about what they are.
And I'll mention that, so that's part of the, that agenda item is
part of the agenda.
Both for the financial items and also for an update on activities. So it's a time for any committee members or consultants to report on their activities recently. And then you see the next two pages, in the green pages, the next two pages actually lists the fact findings for July 08, August 08, September 08, October, and then anticipated future fact findings. So those are all listed there, and this would be time to just mention that they're there or take any comments from the members or consultants.
Well, I don't mind saying here, just to point out to the public, that there are in every year 12 months, and we have three public meetings. Generally, there's this one. There's one in January. This year it'll be the first week in February, but it's January-February timeframe. And another one generally in June, sometimes in May, but in June. In the nine other months, when we don't have a public meeting, in every one of those months we have one fact-finding meeting that we schedule that generally consists of one member of the committee and one of our consultants. So, for example, in August, I went with Jim Booker. And in September, Furman, who was a consultant, went with Per Peterson. And the next one is going to be at the end of October, in which Furman is scheduled to go with Bill Conway. And then in November, I'm going to come back. And then Per Peterson will be back in December. And those generally consist of a couple of days, but sometimes it's been three, in which 10 or sometimes 15 items are on the agenda for 2 days, and we spend an hour or two, sometimes more if we need to, going in detail into some technical issues that we couldn't understand any other way. That's what that's about. Okay. The schedule shows, well, the ones in October and November are scheduled now. Is this an appropriate time to think about the schedule for the ones in December and January, or are we going to try to do that offline?
One in December is scheduled for December the 17th and 18th.
Okay, and that's going to be you and Per Peterson. And the one in January is with me and Furman again. And that's with Bill and Furman. And then I'm the one in February, right? Yeah, okay. And those dates are to be determined. By the way, for the public to know why we can't sometimes determine them in advance is that we have specific issues we want to address, and that requires that our counterparts at PG&E, the person that's the expert on that issue, has to be available. And sometimes we have to find the date when they're available because of their work schedules or other commitments that that have to be, worked through. The other thing to know is that because there's a very big outage coming up, the availability of some of the personnel is more limited than it would be if that weren't the case. Go ahead, Bob.
I just wanted to comment that yesterday we had an inquiry from a member of the public about whether we noticed the fact findings We don't notice the fact findings because they're not public meetings. We're required to notice the public meetings, of course. But the fact findings and the question was, well, not so much clearly they don't, public can't attend the fact findings, but the question was when the person wanted to know, well, when will a member and consultant be here in case we might want to talk to them or something like that. And so it's clear as we set these up, someone can inquire, call my office, and we keep a list of once these have been scheduled. So we can make that information is available. Thank you.
All right. Rob, you have anything else on this at the moment?
No, I think we've covered that. Thank you.
Do we generally schedule our public meetings?
We might want to do that now. You know, let's wait. If we could wait, I sent an email to Pear and inquired about dates
in October
that he might not be available, so no dates that he will be available. And then maybe I can check. I'll check my email, and then if Bill can hang on when we come back later in the agenda, we can. This would be the time that we try to schedule with PG&E our October meeting for 2009.
Yes, but I ought to just say now that we have scheduled the next public meeting for February 11 and 12, 2009, for sure. That's scheduled. We tentatively scheduled June 10th and 11th, 2009, and this is the time when we'll absolutely firm that up. I assume that that is firm, but we just want to check to be sure that there nothing came up that makes that not so.
Bob?
Yes.
What date did you speak to for June 2009?
We were talking about June 10 and June 11, but that was to be confirmed here. So let's do that when we do the October, which is going to be after the break. Rob wants to look at an email to see something. Okay.
Do you plan on discussing some of the fact-finding assignments going into 09 later in the meeting?
Well, we could do that right now. I think we were talking about some of them, Bill, but this would be the time to take that up. You want to go back to that green sheet, Mr. Chairman?
Bill, have you got that green sheet in front of you?
Hang on one. Green?
Right, it's green.
It's right in front of the gold.
Pardon?
It's right in front of the gold ones.
Okay. Right.
There's three sheets. It's look at sheet number three of those three, Bill.
It's right in front of those gold ones, which is the
there?
Open item list.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. So look down, we show the October 28 and 29 fact-finding meeting with you and me. You and me.
Yes.
We show November 5 and 6 for Bob and me. The December one will be December 17 and 18. That'll be Jim Booker and Pear Peterson.
17th and 18th?
That's correct.
Okay.
January will be you and me, and we'll pick a date after the meeting.
Fine.
Next is a February public meeting, which those dates are set.
And the next one is me and Jim on March.
March would be Bob and Jim.
Okay.
And Bill, I think you said you wanted to do May, I believe, so you and I could do May. That would leave April.
April is for Pear.
That's fine. May is fine for me. And Pear in April?
Yeah, and that's probably Pear and Furman.
Right.
And then May is probably you and Bill, Jim. Bill, you and Jim.
In May?
Yeah. You've got May, Bill.
I'm sorry?
You've got May.
With Booker.
Okay.
And that would complete the year.
Exactly, and they're still showing June 10 and 11 for the public meeting.
Yes, until later today when we take a hard look at that with Pear's schedule.
All right. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so Rob, does that complete that part of it?
Yes.
Now, again, when we set the specific dates, we always have to have that. We can do what we want here, but we have to make sure that PG&E says, yeah, that they're available enough, you know, for the counterpart, right? Okay. Does that complete that item?
Yes.
Okay. The next item is XX, and actually it says that that's supposed to be after a break. But do we want to have the break now, or do we want to continue and just keep going with it? I suggest since I at least don't need coffee now, let's continue with that with A, which is public outreach, site visits, and other committee activities. And Rob, I guess that's for you.
Well, I think anyone can participate
or
pitch in on activities. I would note with regard to public outreach, let me pass these out. We mentioned, we continue to provide the website for the committee, and we're putting more and more information on it, you know, as the technology improves. We mentioned the video. And I've passed out to you the report. It's always interesting. This is a report we get from the webmaster. It's not as a complete a report as past, because you see after the first page, everything else is blank. We previously... let me mention the first page. Go back to the first page. You see that
there's a bunch of zeros everywhere.
It's amazing that, and you've seen this before. It's always interesting the number of visits. You see, January there were 2,000, and February 1,675, and then the pages that were reviewed 5,000, 6,700, 10,000 in March, and then the hits. You know, this is the magic, I guess, of search engines. The hits are 15,881, 18,000, et cetera. You see the numbers there. So it shows that folks are looking at the website and the materials that are contained on it, and looking at pages that are the annual report and other documents. As I say, I apologize, the next three pages, and I don't know why I didn't know that. Notice this until we've had before. We've had the you know, the information broken down in the hours, days of the week. You might recall we've had the countries, the top 25, and it listed all
the top 25 countries.
Yeah, and it listed. I mean,
is the U.S. win?
not always. And the users and the visits, et cetera. So we don't have all that information. It is available, and I'll try to have that up to date. As I say, just didn't pick it up this time. But so that's just some indication of that activity. The other public, relative to public outreach, as you mentioned, we've continued at the encouragement of the PUC to increase the public outreach that's involved. It was a request also of the Mothers for Peace. We had previously been doing once a year the public tours that we're able to conduct at the plant, as you mentioned, and now we're doing them three times a year. We do it at each of our public meetings. It's a very successful venture. We publish it in the local newspapers, and on the morning that we take calls, the 50 seats or so that we're able to accommodate are fully subscribed, you know, by the end of the morning. So we continue to do that.
And I must comment as a member of the committee that, besides its transparent success with the public just seemed to really like it, that it has been, at least for me, very beneficial as a member of the committee to go on those bus rides and tours and have various members of the public ask questions and see things that they that motivates them to some concern or an issue that they wouldn't otherwise have. And I think it's been really beneficial for me as a member. Bill, I wonder whether you chime in, probably thinking the same.
Yes, I totally agree. I think it's very advantageous for all concerned. I support it highly.
We do ask for, and we get the folks who have attended provide us with responses back and input and suggestions, and we do get those, and again, it's very positive. Relative to any other, if anyone else has, I have nothing else to report on under this item. If anyone else has any information, we've already talked about site visits and the effect findings and any other committee activities. I think we've probably already covered that under the prior item.
Yeah, I just want to comment about the handout in front of me. Every month this year, it shows January through September. Of course, October is still, we're in the middle of it. Every month, the number of visitors to the site, unique visitors, is 1,000 or more. Unique visitors meaning that if somebody comes twice, it only comes up once as a unique visitor, although the number of visits can be, well, the January it was 1,300 unique visitors and just over 2,000 visits, so some people are coming twice or three times. And I think it's interesting that it's 1,000 or more every month of coming to our site of unique visitors. And that, before I joined the committee, if somebody had asked me, I would have, I'm surprised at how many there are. So that's great. Fact is, the site is really being used by the public. Although I think it's fair to say, I bet Budnitz, that's me, is one of those unique visitors because I go to the site. But it's, but you know, I'm one and Jim is one. That can't be, almost you stare at it, can't be just us looking at it, right?
Let me just go back and visit the issue of the public tour. We have almost always held that public tour on the first day of our two-day session of meetings. It starts the first day, and then we have an afternoon and evening session. So when we have, like yesterday, when we had three sessions scheduled here for the day, it makes a long day. So today, this is unique just because of the situation with PG&E personnel available for the meetings we had yesterday, so we're holding the public tour at the end. But normally,
Bob, can you speak up, please?
Normally, I'm just mentioning that normally we hold the public tours bill on the morning of our first day. This is an exception that we're holding it at the very end of the two-day set of meetings. That's all I have.
Yeah, it had to do with PG&E's availability.
Bob, I had one comment relative to outreach. Do you think it's possible that we could contact the slow span people and have them properly identify the name of the Independent Safety Committee? Their menu shows it as the Independent Safety Commission, and I know it's a bit of a nit, but I guess I'm a sort of a bug for accuracy. I wonder if we could do anything with that.
We will speak to them once again. We've spoken to them. And they also list us under, you have to find us under county meetings, but yeah. We'll talk to them. You're right. We've mentioned that before, and we'll revisit that. Thanks.
Yeah, it is a bit of an anguishment to trying to find the site itself.
It is. Actually, I noticed yesterday for the first time when you go to the if you just go in and Google and go to the slow span opening page, they actually had our committee highlighted as one of the two or three meetings of the week or so. So it was right on the very front page. So that was better. I know Bob had given the instructions that we had to, before you had to go down, you had to go in the meetings and follow all the links down and find us tucked under county meetings as a commission. And yesterday when I visited, it was right on the, there was a little, almost a 1-inch by 1-inch banner ad that showed this meeting that you could get on for the streaming video and the options of doing it with the agenda, without the agenda, without sound or so forth. So it did have, it was a little easier this time.
Yeah, I agree. I also did the same thing and found that to be the simplest way to access the video, quite honestly. The only other comment I would make is watching the video, the lighting associated with the members of the panel sitting at the table was very, very good. The lighting associated with the person making the presentation was very, very poor, such that from my perspective, you couldn't distinguish who the person might be at all.
That's helpful.
We'll take that up with AGP video, and I'm sure they can fix it. They, as you know, we're in a sunny room, which is a little different, and We're the beneficiaries of the curtains they purchased for us to apply in this nice sunny room. So we'll talk to them about that.
Well, the panel members are readily identified. It's the person making the presentation who has pretty much blotted out.
Yeah, but we're actually not trying to keep them incognito. It's inadvertent. Any other items on that one?
No. I have no.
Let's move on to the next one, which is XXB, B for Bravo, documents provided to the committee. We all have a list of them here. It's the pages that are tan-colored, I'd say.
The tan-colored pages just provide, it's just almost an information item. This gives you some indication of all the materials that the committee receives and the members and consultants receive for their review, that there's a list of what they are and when they were provided.
And just to say for the public how extensive this list is, I, as a member of the committee, and all of us, members and consultants, we receive two or three dozen transmittals from PG&E every month. Various things, PG&E's own reports from the plant, letters from the NRC, PG&E's replies to the NRC, other such things, technical reports as they emerge in draft sometimes, minutes of the meetings of their own Nuclear Safety Oversight Committee, minutes of certain plant committees. NRC has information notices that aren't directed necessarily at Diablo. They're just general to all the plants, but, of course, they get them, too, and they send them to us. In addition to that, two or three dozen? And by the way, thank God for email and putting it on the screen, because if it came in print, it would be several inches a month. And it's just there's a lot of trees involved in that, never minding postage, and that's a waste. So thank God. I know we all agree with that it coming electronically makes a huge difference to me, at least, in terms of managing it. In addition to that, we get several transmittals or communications a year from the public. Several a year. We get a few dozen per month from the plant and from NRC. Any other comments about just the character of them? There's a long list of them here, just for the public record, and I know that I can tell you, I look at them. I know the other members do, too. Boy, there's a lot of information. It's amazing. Any other comments?
I was going to suggest, under our outline, we'd anticipated taking a break. Actually, as you indicated, after the open items list, we've now gone through two additional matters, and it's a couple minutes past 9. If maybe we could take a break, I'll go check my email and see if I've heard from Pear.
You want to take a 15-minute break? And if you don't hear from Pear now, you're not liable to in the hour subsequent, but it's possible that you did. Okay? Okay, so let's take a break for, what time is it now?
9:02.
Let's take a break till quarter after. Bill, if you don't mind, we'll just leave the phone open.
Say again, Bob.
We'll just leave the phone open, or do you want us to call you back?
No, you can leave it open. That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill, you can take a break, too.
No, Bill, actually, you can't. You got to sit right next to that all the time.
All those dates except
okay, we're live. So we're going to go back to the scheduling of the public meeting 1 year from now, meaning October. This is 2009. And we now have the information from Per Peterson. Bill, if you have yours, it'll be great. But in any event, we now have Per Peterson's acceptable dates. And he suggests that the whole of October is open for him except the week of October 12. Okay? We're talking about 2009. Now,
this is October of 09?
That's right, just a year from now.
Yeah, okay.
He says the week of October 12 is no good for him. Now, I want to suggest that for me, the first week is out. Okay? That is the week of October 5.
And therefore, let me just be sure, and therefore the best time is perhaps the third week, which is the week of October 19.
No problem for me.
All right, so if it's no, let me say, and also the week of October 26 would be available. Of course, we have to check with Diablo Canyon. But if the week of October 26 is also okay for you, then we can offer them a two-week window, and then we'll ask PG&E to check on their own availability.
Bob, I would prefer the week of October the 19th, if possible.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that I would prefer the earlier, but we have those 2 weeks at least where all three of us, Bill, if you're okay, can be open. And let's ask PG&E to check with a preference for the earlier of the two. Stan?
Okay. I want to introduce myself. I haven't had that opportunity.
Sorry, today, Stan so. Kettleson.
Stan Kettleson. I'm the licensing manager out at Diablo Canyon. The month of October, pretty much that entire month, is our scheduled refueling outage for Unit 2 to R-15.
Oh, so yeah.
It will be difficult. I can't say we can't support that, but as you know, we're pretty focused on the outage during those outage periods.
How about September? I mean, late looking back at September then. We'd have to recheck with the PAIR.
Yeah, when is your... just to say, as I recall... PAIR, by the way, for the public, PAIR Peterson is a professor at University of California, Berkeley, and the last week of September this year was difficult for him because that's the first week of classes, and it's just really hard to take off that first week. The last week of September. So we ought to, without even knowing about PAIR, I think that's probably still the case. When does the outage begin? We have it here, but...
It's pretty much the month of October. I don't know the exact dates.
It's October the 4th and 29th. So the 5th and the 3rd of March.
Is it? Yeah.
The schedule will be there.
Bob, let me check with our management and check the availability in October. Can I provide that feedback to you after the meeting? We can,
right. Yes.
We can finalize the plans subsequently.
And you might even look at September, and we can check with PAIR.
We'll get back with PAIR.
And find out when Dr. Peterson, maybe we can do it in September, so you might look at that as well.
Or the first week in November.
Yeah. All right. Okay. We'll probably have to do this online, and then we'll publish that date. This is just a matter of setting a meeting, so it's not a substantive matter. It's certainly appropriate, and we would we'd then post that time the date, once we select it, to be posted on the website.
All right. Now, just to clarify, you, Stan, or Diablo Canyon, should communicate with Rob Wellington, and he'll be our and Bob Rathy, and that's our clearinghouse.
I understand. We'll get back to Rob.
Bob, what did we settle here?
What we said was that although those last 2 weeks are good for us, they have an outage that whole month.
I heard that. Okay.
So we've agreed that we will try for the last week in September, but we have to check with PAIR Peterson, or perhaps we go off to the first week of November.
So we'll have to get back to you, Bill, after we've talked to heard from Diablo and from PAIR. We'll send out an email and circulate, try to find available dates. It's always a...
Okay, so we're also looking at the last week in September?
The third or fourth week in September, or maybe the first week in November. So we'll just kind of play with all of those.
You might ought to ask Bill what's his availability for those weeks.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll do that with everybody. Thank you.
Any other? And of course, we'll have to. I said Professor Peterson's going to have to be involved in this too. We're now up to agenda item XXI, which is Roman numeral for 21. And these are staff and consultant reports. The first one is Furman Wardell. And the first report is a fact-finding for July 16th and 17th, which is a fact-finding trip that he made with Bill Conway. Go ahead, Furman. And now we're going to do a test here of the whether Bill Conway can see him as he gets to the podium.
All right. Good morning, members and consultants of the committee. Bill, can you see me with a light on?
That's improved, yes.
Okay.
Please speak as loud as you can, Sam, and I'd appreciate that.
All right, Bill, I will. I'm going to cover the July 16 and 17 fact-finding meeting that Bill Conway and I attended, and I've shown the agenda on the screen, and I've handed out copies of that agenda to the committee. The first item we talked about, and by the way, I've submitted a draft report to members of the committee several weeks ago.
Which we reviewed.
The first item on the agenda was training for radiation access. Bill and I underwent some computer-based training to be able to go escorted by DCPP personnel into radiation areas to observe equipment. And we took that training. We both passed and were eligible to enter the radiation areas. The training covered radiation basics, NRC regulations, and the Diablo Canyon specific requirement. It showed about personnel monitoring, talked about shielding and time and distance as far as minimizing radiation dose, and discussed the concept of ALARA, A-L-A-R-A, which is as low as reasonably achievable. As I said, we both passed. I thought the training was appropriate for what we were needing to have done.
Furman, I'm going to ask you a question I know the answer to. Have you ever been at another nuclear plant?
Yes, I have.
I knew. Have you ever had training to enter them? I know the answer to that, too, because
yes.
They all require it. I want to say I have, too. Can you compare your personal observations about this training with that at other nuclear stations?
I would say it's very similar. This wasn't extensive training because we were escorted and by PG&E personnel, so we didn't have to know everything there was, but we just needed enough to know to keep our doses as low as possible. So it was comparable to what other stations have.
And effective?
Excuse me?
And effective?
I thought so. Okay. I thought it was effective. The second item is a system review, and we try to look at a system in the plant or a program at each of our fact-finding meetings. At this particular one, we looked at two systems, the liquid radioactive waste disposal processing system and the gaseous radioactive waste, or rad waste as it's called, system. We also looked at low-level radioactive waste disposal. On the gaseous system, we sat down with the system engineers. They went over the system with us. And basically, that system collects radioactive gases from various tanks and other equipment in the plant, collects it, compresses it, processes it, and then stores it in six gaseous waste decay tanks where the radioactive gas decays. When it has decayed to a certain low level, it's sampled and then can be discharged through the unit vent. The discharge path contains a radiation monitor, which limits the discharge to a very low level. The committee has looked at the releases in the past, and they are a very, very small fraction of the permitted amounts. The gaseous radway system has operated reliably without any major problems pretty much since the plants began operation. One thing that Diablo Canyon is doing is they're upgrading the valve controls to a digital control system, basically because the current control system is becoming obsolete. It's hard to get parts for it. We also looked at the liquid radway system, met with the system engineer of that system, and similarly, they described the purpose of the system, which is to collect radioactive liquids from various tanks and other equipment in the plant, to process it and either recycle it back into the plant or to discharge it, again, through a radiation monitor, which keeps any discharges to a very low level. Discharges go into the Pacific Ocean through the auxiliary saltwater system discharge. Again, those discharges are extremely low. They're very small fractions of the nuclear regulatory limits as well as the station technical specification limits. We discussed briefly what Diablo Canyon does with their solid radioactive waste, and that falls in several categories. And we're not talking high-level spent fuel here. We're talking the low-level waste. The three categories, A, B, and C, and those categories are determined by the amount of radioactivity in the batches. Some of these are packaged up and had been sent to Barnwell, South Carolina, to a certified facility. That facility has closed or is closing,
And the applicant is looking at another possible site in Tennessee, and they are able to send some level A, the lowest level waste, to a disposal site in Utah. Some of the solid waste resins and cartridge filters are in concrete containers. Those are stored at the site, and they have enough storage for the life of the plant. We took a tour of the Redway systems, or at least some of the components of the Redway systems. I've listed those in my report. I won't go over them here, but we basically looked at the major components. Bottom line on the radioactive processing, waste processing systems, that they were operating well, there were no problem areas, and any releases to the environment had been controlled properly. We looked next at the management training programs, met with Ardella Daniels, the Leadership Development Program Manager. She explained to us that Diablo Canyon is taking some major steps in leadership development. They had pointed out that there were some gaps to excellence in that program. I guess the programs were considered generally adequate, but they were looking for a higher level of development of the leaders at the plant. Some things they've done, they've been using a course called Crucial Conversations with Plant Leadership. That's a course on how to have confrontation with others, however, maintaining relationships. That's been a good program for the station. They have started up a new leadership development program, which all supervisors will go to, either initial or refresher training, continuing training. They have developed a new training advisory committee. A lot of this is at the request or the direction of the Chief Nuclear Officer, John Conway. They've begun a quarterly leadership performance indicator roll-up meetings. So basically, they have started on what I would call a new front on leadership development training. It hadn't been put in place yet. It should be in place very soon. I'd suggest the committee maybe continue to follow this in the future. We look next at the benchmarking program, met with the coordinator of benchmarking. And the benchmarking program is basically one, a formal program for personnel at the station to go to other stations to benchmark or look at their processes and programs to make improvements here. This is controlled by a procedure at Diablo Canyon, so it's very formalized. Formal reports are written when the team returns. A self-assessment review board has been established, which reviews and approves the formal reports. The recommendations that come back are put into the corrective action program, where they are then implemented and tracked.
Furman, these are when a Diablo Canyon person goes to another station.
That's correct.
Right. Now, of course, the other direction occurs all the time, too. Other station people come to Diablo Canyon. Is that part of this, or is there a different program for evaluating that?
I think this program refers only to Diablo Canyon personnel going to other locations. However, they do capture benchmarking ideas from a lot of venues, including when people come to the station, or if they're at a meeting just talking to somebody, they're expected to bring those items back.
Okay.
There were 20 formal benchmarking trips in 2007 in the first half, or at least through March in 2008. I listed those in the report. The team looked at several, and I'll just, one is a reactor head replacement. They're getting ready to replace the reactor vessel heads at Diablo Canyon in the next couple of years. Operations issues, organizational effectiveness, containment management, online chemistry data, boric acid corrosion control, and other ones as well. We looked at those reports. They were full of what I'll call useful nuggets for the station to make improvements. So we thought the program looked sound. One thing we did note that as teams go out on not formal benchmarking, but other meetings at other stations, talk to other people, they don't have a formal process to bring ideas back and get them in the system. Some people do, some people don't. So we thought and recommended to them that that would be a good practice, which would be beneficial to them. We then looked at item five, STARS, which is the strategic teaming and resource sharing. Diablo Canyon, along with six other nuclear stations, had formed some years ago this group to help each other out, to combine resources, to share knowledge. And that's worked quite well for them. There's a lot of economic advantage in doing that. And I'll just mention some of the areas that STARS is focusing on as far as operational excellence goes. One is zero fuel defects by 2010. There's some fleet performance indicator developments, excellence in diesel generator operations. All nuclear stations have diesel generator power backup. The diesels sometimes need help. They can be a little persnickety, and they take a lot of care in feeding, if you might want to put it that way. So they're working together to keep the diesel to have excellence, so the diesels run particularly well. I've listed others in the report, which you can see. The bottom line here is we feel like Diablo Canyon's involvement in STARS is a beneficial one. It's also useful in some of their Nuclear Regulatory Commission licensing initiatives, including, for example, one we've looked at, which is the containment sump debris strainers, which are now installed, and testing is completing on those. That was one area where it was particularly beneficial.
Was the integrated leak rate test issue on among those that the STARS Alliance was helping them with?
Bob, I don't remember seeing that on the list.
I mean, I recall in our August fact-finding, Jim and I talked to the staff member who was responsible for that at the long outage on Unit 2 that was in the spring. And she told us that they had learned a bunch of lessons from their counterparts, but I'm not sure whether it was part of the STARS thing. But that whether or not it is, it's an example of they're trying to share lessons, and then the lessons that they did are going to be shared with their colleagues, too, who are going to be going through it.
Yeah, I was with you on that trip, I recall.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the one that that was when you and I were here in May. It wasn't
right.
Jim in August. That's right.
Yeah, that wasn't necessarily a STARS.
I can't remember
thing,
if it was STARS or not.
They did go to a couple of plants to look at the benchmarking. As benchmarking is what it turned out to be. Yeah. Paid off for them, I think.
Yeah, okay.
We then looked at item 6, and I might add that Bill and I are both cleared for safeguards information access, and we followed up on the NRC security order B.5.B, which is an order the NRC sent out a couple of years ago dealing with beyond design basis events. And we had looked in several previous fact-finding meetings at this, and Diablo Canyon has effectively implemented their new procedures, their new training and equipment, which has been required. One aspect we looked at in this case was there was some non-routine or specialized equipment, portable mostly, which is used to make certain system connections in this program. These are stored in what they call it a C-train, basically a big metal container. And this equipment is particularly important to this order and this program. We looked at that, and everything looked satisfactory as well as the procedures we looked at. That's about as much detail as I can get into on this item because it's security related.
Can I interrupt with a question here?
Certainly.
Bill Conway has the necessary paperwork to enable his, he's cleared for access to that information, and you also.
That's correct.
I have a Department of Energy Q clearance, which is equivalent to a top secret clearance, and I know for sure Peterson does too, because he and I know that together. What does it take for me or Pear or both of us to get that clearance so that we could also share in these evaluations as they come along?
In fact, Pear and I used to be the two that
I know Pear has that clearance.
Was off the committee before. I think we need to talk to PG&E first. I know before they'd wanted to limit the numbers of us who had access to safeguards information. So we need to talk to them and see what that looks like. Bill, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I don't know if you want to chime in on that question or not.
No, I think that's probably a very logical answer. I think that issue should be discussed, I think, with PG&E people.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough. It seems to me that since I've already got that clearance and I've had it for a long time, I mean, long time meaning several decades, that there's no question in my mind I qualify. It's only a question of whether, we want to extend it to a larger number of us. Okay.
Oh, by the way, Bill, I meant to mention, if you have any comments on any of these items from our fact-finding, please do chime in.
There's no,
yes, I will. Thank you.
There's no danger that he'll be
quiet, is there, Bill?
All right. Item 7, we looked at the mid-cycle INPO-type self-assessment. INPO, the Institute for Nuclear Power Operations, evaluates the station approximately every 18 months to 24 months. I think in Diablo's case, it's every 24 months. And in between those evaluations, Diablo County does their own self-assessment based on INPO requirements. They did this, and let me preface my remarks here by saying that the relationship between INPO and the utility is a special one. It's a very robust program where they're striving for excellence. However, it's also considered somewhat confidential between the two parties. They do share the information with us, but they ask us not to publish it in public reports, and we honor that. So my report, which did list some of the findings from that in some detail, will be changed to take some of the detail out. Not that I can't share it with other members and consultants on the committee, but it's just an agreement that the industry has about the nature of the information. Suffice it to say that we reviewed the audit or the self-assessment plan, found it quite thorough. We reviewed a draft of the self-assessment report, and INPO, when they do their evaluation, comes up with areas for improvement, AFIs, which are areas that are not inadequate. They meet minimum requirements, but they're not excellent, and we're striving for excellence here, industry best. From the past INPO evaluation, I believe there were 12 or 14 AFIs. I've forgotten the number, something like that. They're in previous reports. And this self-assessment looked at those 12 or 14 AFIs to see if they had been satisfactorily resolved or not. Some had, some hadn't. There were 5 remaining that needed work to be done on them. And this is in preparation for next spring's next INPO evaluation. So there were 4 previous AFIs saying that they needed more work. And there were 5 new ones identified. And those were in my draft. I need to, as I mentioned earlier, I'll need to make those more general than they are. So that's one change to the report. When I ask for approval, that'll be one change I'll have to make. Bottom line is we thought the report was thorough, intrusive, and what it identified relates to a lot of the issues that our committee has come up with as well. So they seem pretty reasonable to me. Bill, any comment?
I would suggest that you take this opportunity perhaps to inform the public as well as the remainder of the committee of the loan program and the reverse loan program that most utilities and certainly PG&E participates in with INPO.
Good point, Bill. As Bill mentioned, all nuclear utilities, all nuclear plants are members of INPO, and they usually provide a person at a time to INPO to participate in the evaluation teams for evaluations that are done at other stations. So it's a two-way street. It gives INPO an experienced person, say from Diablo Canyon. It also lets that person see what's going on at other plants, almost like a benchmarking. That person can bring back to, certainly to INPO and back to the station here, good ideas, good practices from other stations. So Diablo Canyon currently has one person now at INPO.
I want to comment that you and Bill Conway were there in July. A month later in August, Jim Booker and I were there, and the same item was on our agenda, too, fact-finding. And, of course, what we did was building on what you had learned. There were some discussions on the phone to make sure that we did what we did. And Jim Booker in 15 or 30 minutes is going to be reporting on our findings, but basically you'll see that our findings and yours are consistent, not much surprise there. On the other hand, there was some new stuff that had come along in the intervening month, which we learned, which was sort of reinforces. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Look forward to that report. We then looked at item 8, operator concerns. That shows also mispositioning issues, which we did not look at, actually, at this time, because we had looked at that back at our January public meeting. And there wasn't much new to be seen there. We talked to the Senior Director of Operations Services, and this gets back to an item last year or year before last where the Nuclear Safety Oversight Committee, or NSOC, had interviewed some operators and had identified some operator concerns. This was a follow-up on that. Most of those concerns had been addressed. We looked at that in previous fact-finding meetings. However, there were two new concerns mentioned. One was work control credibility, and the second was knowledge transfer. Work control credibility basically were concerns by the operators that the work control process, in other words, basically maintenance, was being done in such a fashion that the operators could rely on the results of that maintenance. So it basically needed to be beefed up a good bit. And that is, Kerry Harper mentioned that to us yesterday, and others have as well. So it's an improvement in the work control program. The second is knowledge transfer, and what that means is as operators retire from the plant and leave the plant, they need to transfer some knowledge to the newer and existing operators. So that was a concern operators have had. These have been addressed along with the other concerns of operators, which I've listed here, and we've talked about these in previous public meetings. So basically, I think the bottom line in here is that the things that Diablo is doing to help the operator concerns, for example, higher standards for new licensed operator entry, and Jim Welch talked about that yesterday, augmented operator training, enhancing operations procedure quality, and increasing operations leadership skills have gone toward augmenting some of the concerns of the operators. The other two things I mentioned, work control, that is also being augmented and improved, and they're discussing plans for operator knowledge transfer. So I think those are appropriate for the time, and we should continue to follow some of these until they're resolved. Item 9 is an item regarding the steam generator replacement project and its control of supplemental personnel. And what I mean by that is these are contractors that come on the site during outages, in this case during the Unit 2 outage 2R14 in which the steam generators were replaced. A lot of work. There were hundreds of contractors brought into the site. And the reason we looked at this is because Diablo and most of the industry has to deal with a lot of people and has to get them to work properly, work safely, et cetera.
And they're employed by a lot of different contract employers.
There are a number of contractors that have the employees here. And it's a challenge, and it's particularly a challenge on personnel safety. You recall yesterday that Bill Mullen, what's Bill's name?
Alderman.
Yeah, thank you. Goldman provide them, so I've listed those in the report, the most important of which were control of material at heights, in other words, lifting heavy equipment, heavy pieces, and working at heights, people working high in the plant. The steam generator replacement project primary vendor, SGT, had its own safety plan, which met the Diablo Canyon plan. So they had a good program. They did good training. There were, however, three significant personnel events, which I've listed in the report. One was a package or an assembly of reinforcing bars had dropped. This is the heavy loads at heights. Another was an employee slipping, descending a scaffold, again, working at heights and descending. And then a supplemental personnel on a concrete form, working high, had slipped. Each case, work was stopped. They talked about the causes and corrective actions. And following the outage, Diablo Canyon performed a supplemental personnel oversight self-assessment, and it had some recommendations for the next outages, for example, 1R15 coming up in January, where the steam generators will be replaced there.
Can I ask you whether, my memory is, unfortunately, none of those three incidents resulted in a serious injury, but of course...
That's correct.
But that aside, the potential... We need to do everything we can to avert even those potentials.
Right. There were no serious injuries. In fact, in the first case, there were no injuries at all. There were some bumps and bruises on the others.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it... We're still not satisfied.
No. Zero is the goal, obviously. Anyway, bottom line in this case is I think they had pretty good record of safety in the outage 2R14 in spite of these three. They're going to improve that with their lessons learned and with these with the newly implemented program based on the self-assessment they've done. Then finally, Bill Conway met separately with Jim Booker, who is the site vice president and plant manager, to talk about items in our fact-finding report. And that concludes the report. Bill, any comments?
No, I don't have anything additional, Furman.
All right.
Is this ripe for the committee now to approve this report?
That was my next statement. I was going to ask the committee to approve the report, keeping in mind that in that one section on the INPO AFIs, we're going to make that more general, not be quite so specific.
Bill, do you want to make a motion to approve, that which I'll go along with?
I will. I make a motion that the fact-finding report be approved as identified.
Well, I'm on board with that, and so it is approved.
All right,
and,
thank you.
And that'll then, with the changes that you've talked about, then we'll go into our permanent records.
Very good.
All right, now, the next agenda item is for you to talk about your September visit, but it doesn't make sense to me to do that now, because between your July and your September, Jim has August. And it seems to me we ought to just do this chronologically and let Jim talk about the August one next, and then you can talk about the September, because we pursue each other's issues. What do you think?
Well, Dr. Peterson, who attended the September meeting with me, asked me not to make a full report today because
yes.
He wanted to be here.
Yeah, fair enough. And
so all I'm doing is just showing the agenda. Here's what we looked at, and that's all I was going to say.
Oh, there wasn't going to be any more anyway. Well, Jim and I were there in August, and he'll come up then. We don't have a written report, but Jim is prepared to talk about more. Of course, this is fair enough. This was only just a couple weeks ago. Go ahead.
That's all I'm going to say. I just parent Dr. Peterson.
Jim Booker wasn't able to do as much on this as he wanted because Hurricane Ike came through Beaumont, and he and his wife were out of house for a couple of weeks. And that sounds to me, and with the disruption therein, that sounds to me like a reasonable excuse for it not quite being as ready as it might otherwise be. Jim is smiling about that, but I'm happy to report Jim's report that everybody was, nobody was hurt. Go ahead.
Bill, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Yeah, Bob, you stood on all my thunders why I don't have the report. The week after our fact-finding meeting, I went on vacation. And then Hurricane Ike hit Galveston and Houston and Beaumont and disrupted the power for about 3 or 4 weeks. In fact, I couldn't get home for 2 weeks. But anyway, I'm going to report on what we had. The first item we covered was the review of the results of the mid-cycle review and the status of the INPO AFIs, areas for improvement. And I'll try not to repeat the areas that Furman covered, but I might do a few of those. Furman explained exactly what this mid-cycle review is. I don't think he talked about how it was performed. It was performed by a team of employees from Diablo Canyon, a team of peer evaluators or peer experts with other utilities, who all the utilities share in doing that, and there was one IMPO evaluator there also. As Furman reported, they were 9 areas for improvement. 4 of those were, what are they doing? Is it looking at the status of the AFIs that were identified in the 2007 IMPO evaluation? The next IMPO evaluation is going to be June of 2009. And so they evaluated the status of them, whether they had taken the corrective action, whether the corrective action was effective, or did they need to do more work on them? And they identified 4 areas that they needed to do some more work on. They also identified 5 new ones that they had some concerns about that they needed to do something about it before IMPO comes in. One of the things that Furman did not talk about, I don't think he talked about, is as a result of these new ones they identified and the 4 that had not been completed, they appointed a high-level team, AFI team, which was composed of John Conway, Senior Vice President and Chief Nuclear Officer, Jim Becker, Site Vice President and Station Manager, and Jackie Hines, Assistant to Senior Vice President, to really follow up in more detail on the status of these AFIs to be sure they're all completed before IMPO comes in next June. We actually saw the final report, whereas Furman and Bill had seen the draft report, and I don't think there's any major changes on it. But one of the issues was, I guess there's 2 issues that Ms. Hines identified to us. Is one, she had really liked to have had more actual plant observations than they did. But they were, because of time restraints, they were only able to do that 1 week. And so that the report only reflects that. But she would have preferred in the future to have more time doing that. And then another issue she brought up, and this is really one of the reasons they appointed this high-level AFI committee to look at, is a lot of these has to do with culture and management involvement in these issues. Mm-hmm. And they want to be sure they get the correct attention to that. And any of the issues that are involved like that, it takes a long time to make improvements on that. and they're very difficult too. So they're paying a lot of attention to the culture involved with these issues, and then also the management involvement of looking at these issues and how they take it up. And Bob, do you have anything else on that particular issue there?
Only to add that priority that he and Conway were going to give it senior management attention so that every one of these, so to make sure none of them is given less than full attention. Yeah, I couldn't have asked for a stronger commitment than he said to me personally, and that's nice to know. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
The next item we covered was a discussion of the Paul Allen's letter on Midas that was involved in the June 08 public meeting here. We heard that yesterday. I don't think I need to go into any more details on that, except what Mark had told us when we were there, that he was going to pursue working with the Homeland Security to see what kind of model they had and what they're going to do. And also he was going to set up a meeting with the San Luis Obispo people that he talked about yesterday in November to try to pursue this issue and resolve the issue of Midas, and I think they're going to do that. I think we'll have to wait and see. I would recommend two things. One is certainly the committee keep involved in how this is resolved in the future, and then I also recommend to Furman and Bill that whenever you observe the emergency exercise in October, it might be a good time for y'all to go down there where they're doing a dose assessment and see how they're communicating together and what type model they're using on that. So I think it'd be a good opportunity to see it firsthand. But I certainly recommend this be an open item on our open item list, and we continue to follow that either in fact findings or future public meetings. The next item on our list to review the makeup water system, and the reason we did this is when Bill Conway and I were here in November of 2006, and we had a very nice discussion on the makeup water systems, what all was involved with the system engineer, and had a very good walk down. But as we were getting ready to leave, I was asking him for some copies of the description of the makeup water system and also the instructions on that. And I guess maybe we miscommunicated with that system engineer because he made the statement that we don't have any of those. I just remember all of those. And I guess it was, and that was actually a recommendation that we made. But looking into it further, that system engineer was going to retire, and he retired since then on his own. He retired and moved to the mountains to do what he wanted to do. So we had a new system engineer we were talking to, and I guess part of his answer to us was correct, and part of it was not. Is actually General Electric operates the reverse osmosis seawater system, and that's under General Electric's control. They operate and maintain it, so naturally Diablo Canyon doesn't have the instructions to do that. General Electric does. General Electric also operates the filtration system, and it's the same thing as General Electric has the operate instructions and descriptions. But Diablo Canyon does have the instructions and descriptions of the rest of the makeup water system, which consists of the Ramey wells, which is a particular well system which draws water from a particular strata there, the deep water system, and they actually draw water from the creek. Now, they did that in the past, but when they were working with the San Luis Obispo County to get a permit to build their old steam generator storage building, they came to an agreement that they would stop drawing water out of that creek, so that is no longer be part of their makeup system, and that's going to be okay. They still have enough other systems to do that. So actually, that recommendation and what PG&E's response was acceptable response, and we can remove that from our list now, Furman. I guess in that period of time is that, and he's already talked about it, is Bob met with Jim Becker, as we always meet with him, to discuss the agenda items and what's going on.
Let's go back up to the makeup water system agenda item. So you and I had a tour of it in detail by the current owner of that system, I'll call him that, whose name is Joe Anastasio,
right,
from the plant.
So we reviewed the system health reports of each one of those systems. Unit number one, it is yellow. And the reason for that is it was reduced in power twice in this past year. One of them was on storm events, an excessive debris carryover, and the second one was one of the circulating water pump bearing temperature thermocouples. And that thermocouple has been replaced, and they're going to do some other work on the screens. They're going to put in new bar racks. They have a project now to put in new bar racks and also put in racks that can actually remove the debris off those racks before they get into the screens. And that's going to be 2009, so they should go to white. And when I say white, is they have a designation of white and green and yellow and red. Green is everything is satisfactory, everything is working proper. White is not working as well. It's working good, and it's doing its job, but there's some things they need to improve on it. So when I say it's white, when I say it's yellow, it's really not that bad because it's going to go in yellow and red. It's operating fine. It's just some things they need to do to it. The other system we looked at was the auxiliary salt water system, which is cooling water to the component cooling water heat exchangers, which is really providing cooling to the other parts of the plant. And then the last one is the service water cooling system, which is providing removing heat from the various secondary systems of the plant. Bob, you had something to say?
Yeah, I had two comments. First, Joe Anastasio seemed like he not only gave us an excellent tour, and he certainly was knowledgeable and answered our questions, but he was very much aware of the of the deficiencies that stand between them and what I call an absolutely excellent system. Some of those have to do, and everybody knows this. This is not, and by the way, this is not in the way of it having safe performance. I mean, it's adequate for that, but excellence is different. It's that the systems are old. Some of those systems were installed in the 70s and first were operational when the plant came up in the 80s, and 25 or sometimes even 30 years. It shows its age without arguing that it still isn't functional. And he was candid with us, and of course, as everybody needs to know, if this plant's going to run beyond its 40-year license, which is still not determined that PG&E's going to ask for that, but if they ask for that and NRC goes through a review of that, these systems will be among those that are going to have to be looked at carefully to assure that they have that that long-duration capability. And that's something in front of us. I just want to say that.
Well, and also these systems are have a very harsh environment down there, the salt seawater. So any time you have equipment down there located in that environment, you really have to pay a lot of attention to it to keep it up.
That's a fair comment. Not only that, but it's not just a harsh routine environment, but they have from time to time upset off routine things. You know, a big storm surge or a whole lot of algae or whatever, or other marine things. So it's among the most difficult systems in the plant to keep in good shape. And the fact that it looked good to me and that they've done so, I think, is to their credit. On the other hand, everybody knows that that keeping these in good operational shape over the long haul is going to be a challenge to them, and they're candid about it too.
And I think they're looking after it very well, too.
Yes, they are.
And they're aware of that right now. The next item is we met with, as we just talked about, and then formal communication. So his key issues were pretty much in line with what he talked about yesterday. It's a lot of them the same. It needs to be resolved. See, the next item we reviewed was the operating experience program. This is a program on how they use the operating experience, not only here from Diablo Canyon, but from the entire nuclear industry, is how they take those operating experience and apply it here at Diablo Canyon to see if an event or something happens at another plant, that they take advantage of that and investigate that to see if they need to make any changes or do anything with either training or procedures or equipment qualifications. And that's really an OE program, operating experience program, is mostly put out by IMPO. All utilities furnish IMPO into the operating experience they've had. Diablo Canyon normally reports about 25 operating experience events to the IMPO each year. Their position is that they've had a hard time in the past getting the line organizations to utilize the operating experience program properly. He thinks they've made a lot of improvement in that in the last two or three years. He sees that more often in daily planning of when they're planning their work. They talk about operating experience of similar issues like this, and they're doing a much better program in that, doing a much better job of implementing that.
Jim, as I recall, incoming from the rest of the industry, there are 1,000 or more items per year, because it's a dozen or two from every plant, and they're, after all.
Yes, that's correct. There's a lot of them that they get, how they handle their program. Once they get those in, then they have a daily meeting of the OE program group to screen those, because some of them may not pertain to Diablo Canyon. And if they don't pertain to Diablo Canyon, they'll just put those aside. But the ones that do, then they get assigned a person to respond to those, and they have a lot time limit on it, on how soon they can respond to it and what the response is going to be. And then we talked a lot about the transformer failure that we talked about yesterday, and they were involved in preparing an OE to send to IMPO on that one, and also looking at the SOER that they had received years ago about transformer failures to be sure they had implemented everything.
The other thing that's worth reporting is that INPO has this operating, this OE program industry-wide, but of course NRC does too, but for a different group. NRC has a program in which the plants are required to report through the LER, the Licensee Event Report System, things like this that are relevant to their, to the NRC's regulatory safety mission, which is a subset of these.
Yes, IMPO sends out what they call information notices
right.
to all power plants.
Right.
And that is also part of the operating experience program here.
You bet. But the subset of these that have important safety implications, either here or around the rest of the industry, are dealt with in parallel through the NRC's. NRC has the LER program, and then they have information notices too, or you know, information bulletins of various kinds. This INPO program is more extensive because it covers a whole lot of things that are beyond the scope of or below the threshold of the NRC's LER program.
There's a tremendous amount of information being been supplied by the whole industry about what all is happening that you have to go through, but their program was very satisfactory and doing very good. So INPO looked at that OE program a lot more details than we do. So getting that from INPO is a pretty good indication that their program is good.
Okay, my reaction was that from the visit we had, and this is not untypical of us, I couldn't tell. I couldn't get into the detail, and that's without apologies. We didn't, after all, spend several days on that. It was just an hour and a half talking to the program owner at the plant. But my impression was positive without being able to get into the detail. I guess it's not inappropriate for us to be relying on the fact that INPO did an in-depth evaluation.
And there were no AFIs, areas for improvement, identified by INPO in this area, which they would have if they saw any. I think the program has been very good for a long time. I think the implementation of the people utilizing that program is what they've been having struggle to make improvements on. And they are making improvements with the line organization, because that's what it boils down to, is the line organization using this information as they plan their work and what they're doing.
Thanks.
The last item that we had on our agenda was the briefing on the unit number 2 main transformer, a bushing failure that we had yesterday, and I don't think I need to go into any more details on that. And I can say I apologize for not having a report. I'll be putting that report out shortly for y'all's review. We'll go through, Bob will review it, and then the committee members will make their comments, and then I will incorporate those comments and send it out to review. And we can either approve that report by email, or we can do it at the February public meeting.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Bill, do you have any questions?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Well, I had a couple comments. First, as is typical, a couple of sections were mine to write up, and I didn't have a hurricane, right?
Oh, that's
so
right.
So I wrote mine up. I'm not complaining here. Yeah. It's just, and the other's coming along soon. I had a comment about the transformer failure. When we were there, it was still during the recovery period. The unit was down. It was down just over 3 weeks, but we were there during that. So we were able to actually see during the period when there was still some damage that they hadn't yet recovered from, and we had a tour that showed us that. And I was struck by something we said yesterday, which is that there was some luck here that personnel weren't in the area because it was a few minutes before midnight.
Well, yeah, we toured part of the administration building where the windows were actually broken out, and if personnel would have been at those desks, they could have been injured. They also told us that they weren't just going to replace the windows; they're going to replace them with this stronger material, as Susan talked about yesterday, to prevent that from happening again. So that was a good quick fix for that.
Yeah. That's right, and of course near the unit itself, which we looked down on, there was debris that was in the process of being cleaned up because it was just shortly before we were there. And And they were doing a good job, as best I could tell, but boy, they were lucky that that there just didn't happen to be a person.
It so happened that the manufacturer's representative was there that day starting to inspect the transformer because they didn't know at that time whether it could be rebuilt or not. And we heard yesterday it is going to be able to be rebuilt.
Right. There was a team from Austria, from the manufacturer, that had come to do their inspection of the damaged thing, which we saw. Any other questions on that, Bill?
No, I didn't catch the last.
And my guess is we'll approve it probably at the next one, but it'll be complete long before.
Bob, did I hear you say the report was in progress?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty soon now.
Okay.
So then that report will be brought to the our February meeting for approval.
Yeah, I mean, we should have it basically.
Well, I'll send out the report to the members and consultants, just like we do all reports by email for first review.
Right,
that's what we always do.
Right. That's,
then after I get their comments, then I'll incorporate those comments and issue a final report.
Right.
We have approved reports in the past by email.
We
have a choice of either approving the report by email, or we can hold off till the February meeting and approve it then. It's up to the committee members.
I'm going to recommend that we approve all the fact-finding reports and open in the public meeting and not by email.
Yeah. Although, effectively, if there are any issues, we'll have raised them with each other just so as to get the earlier the feedback, the better, in the sense that it gets stale if it's several months later, you know. And to me, that's a straightforward way to make sure that they're as technically topical as they can be. Well, that being done, the next item on the agenda is for Rob Wellington.
Bob?
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the resolution as with respect to approval.
We've agreed that the formal approval will be done in the public meetings.
Say again?
The formal approval will be done in the public meeting.
All right, fine, thank you.
Even though factually, if there's anything important, we're going to have done it informally before without approval, but just to be sure that we get the feedback back and forth.
Okay, fine.
Right? You know, before it gets stale. Right? Okay, Rob Wellington next on item 21C, which is administrative, regulatory, and legal matters.
I really have nothing to add other than items I've already mentioned, except for just to mention that we talked about the annual report, and as soon as the annual report is done, then we put it into a CD version, which and the members who then visit with their respective appointing entities, the Attorney General, Governor, and the Energy Commission, then can provide these. We send these out as well, and some folks actually prefer, I think, when Bill and I last met with the Energy Commission, they actually were happy to have the full hard copy to go through, but other folks just prefer just for filing purposes, so we also have this on the CD.
Well, when I met with the Attorney General, he and his staff also were, they wanted the hard copy to look at, but they also wanted the CD for archival, and I think that's the right thing. Hmm.
They have a choice to get one or either or both.
Yeah. Nothing more on that. The next item is 22, correspondence.
Let me just mention briefly, these are the items that are at the end of the what we call the rainbow packet for today, and it's the blue pages. It includes all the correspondence to and from the committee, which would be of interest since the last public meeting. You note that they have been raised, and we have just to get it into the packet and public record, we have the letter from Paul Allen that he presented at the time he spoke to us back at the in the June meeting, and of course this was the topic that was addressed by Dr. Somerville on behalf of PG&E yesterday. That's all I have on the correspondence.
Could someone comment on the whatever happened to the inquiry that was made by the gentleman from South Africa?
I don't think there has been. We don't have anything back yet from PG&E. That was just forwarded to PG&E, and we're awaiting any response that might come from that. So once we get that from PG&E, we'll let you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's fair right here to urge PG&E to give us something back there, because if there's a technical issue for us to be attentive to, we need PG&E's reaction to it before we can have the full story.
Bob, would you repeat that?
Well, you can probably guess what I said, which is urging PG&E to be attentive to it so that we can have the information to deal with it.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Well, it appears to me, looking at it, all the individuals asking for this information, period. It was no issue or anything. He was just asking for information, and we referred that to PG&E if they would respond to it.
Yeah.
Bob, let me respond.
Yeah, go ahead. This is Stan Kettleson.
I'm not personally familiar with the status of the response, but I'll follow up.
Yeah, I mean,
at the plant, we'll make sure that the inquiry from the gentleman.
Yeah, let's just make sure that it hasn't inadvertently fallen through a crack here. Any other correspondence questions, Rob?
No.
I just want to react. In the middle of this packet is a telephone call that was received on our line in August by a woman who was looking to buy some sort of a product that measures radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And she was worried about illness from radiation and wanted us to react. And the call's documented. But we referred her to Kent Oliver, and I think we discharge our responsibility on that. That's not something that's within our purview, except just to do the reference properly.
She was just inquiring for some information, and so we referred her to Kent as the appropriate contact person.
And I don't think we need any further disposition of that item at all from our purposes.
That's correct.
Right. Just to mention that it was there, in case she or anybody that knows her is looking or wondering about it, we did the right thing, I'm sure. Okay, next item is concluding remarks and discussion by committee members of future activities. Committee member Conway's out there. Do you have anything here?
No, I don't have anything to add, Bob.
Future actions by the committee. Go ahead, Rob.
I think we've already probably discussed this item. We talked about previously about the fact findings. We should note, just for the record, and we've mentioned this, we have our next public.
Next item is further information to obtain. Does any of us have any further information that we think we need to obtain on any items here?
Not that hadn't already been identified.
Yeah, I don't see anything that came up. With one exception, which I think came up, but I just want to be sure I say it. We had some discussion yesterday about the issues having to do with engineers and the morale of engineers and their effectiveness, which were raised in the discussion about the union. And that set of issues is going to be on our plate at first through some fact-finding inquiries, and then later on we'll decide what to do. I mean, that's one of the future topics that'll be on our action list, is to be sure that we understand as best we can what the concerns are and get the full picture.
Bill, were you on yesterday when that individual made that report about the engineers here at Diablo Canyon and the union? Did you hear that personally?
No.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Did you hear the presentation by the public, who was an engineer at Diablo Canyon, discuss the formation of their union here and why they did that?
No, I did not hear that presentation.
Somehow or another, you need to review that over the internet or through the TV or whatever.
Yeah,
you need to review that yourself.
And we need to get Per Peterson to review it too. That particular segment, I think, raised the topic in a way that we need to be attentive to. To inform what we're going to do about it in our fact findings. Okay.
Well, I understand what you're saying. Are we looking for implications that could impact nuclear safety, or are we just interested in why they formed a union?
No, it's the former, not the latter. The fact is...
I think that's most appropriate.
Sure. The fact is that there's the possible long-term implications for nuclear safety of impacts on morale or effectiveness that were raised, and I think in order for us to get to the bottom of it, you and Pear would benefit from going to the streaming of the presentation and just look at that topic so as to get the direct input that we got from that member of the public. I thought it was an interesting thing. Some interesting issues were raised, and some perspectives that you couldn't get any other way but from watching that.
We can also...
Yes, and I will certainly do that. I guess my only comment would be, as I alluded to a little bit earlier, I think we should be looking at whatever potential aspects there may be with respect to nuclear safety. On the other hand, I think we should very carefully and prudently avoid the issue of labor relations within the organization
that
we can't subscribe to being an impact or a potential impact on nuclear safety.
That's right, or personnel safety. You're completely right. We want to restrict ourselves to that. On the other hand, until we look at it, we're not prepared to say that there aren't some safety issues there. The potential was raised, and I think we have the obligation to dig around and see what we can conclude ourselves. Right.
Bill, he really, the individual really.
But I think through some sort of detailed observation and discussions, you can get closer and closer to whether you suspect something of that nature exists.
Right, and we have to be also careful, as we were yesterday, to observe that PG&E itself has a formal program for individuals to report such things to the management. But what was reported here wasn't as much an individual thing as what I'll call a collective environment that is different than what an individual might report.
I have one other question, and I guess it falls into that neighborhood in a sense. At the June public meeting, one of the members of the public submitted to us a copy of a letter between that individual and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission with respect to certain allegations associated with the plant. Is there any feedback as a result of whatever investigation may have concluded, whether that was valid or invalid, or what is the status of that whole situation?
Well, we might have to ask. We'd have to ask PG&E. We haven't, Bill. Those letters are mentioned. I mentioned those letters. Those letters are included in the correspondence in the blue pages of your rainbow packet. It's the letter of April from the mother, April 14th from the Mothers of Peace, and then from May 8th from back to them from the NRC indicating.
And where are those? I just wondered. The NRC, I think, had instructed the licensee to investigate some of the aspects of those allegations, and I wondered where that stood, if it's possible to identify where it stands.
PG&E, Dan?
Yes, that's my understanding is that's been entered into the allegation system at the NRC, and the committee should take that up with the NRC in terms of the results of the investigation.
Okay, so as far as you're concerned, without putting words in your mouth, that in your opinion, that's in motion?
That is my understanding, yes.
All right, thank you.
Bill, one other comment about the engineer who talked to yesterday is I asked him, did he, understanding what he was saying, did he have any safety concerns with the operation of Diablo Canyon? And he said no. I said, you know that if you do have any safety concerns, there's a lot of avenues to raise that, and you have the responsibility to raise that. He says every one of the engineers understand that, and they'll abide by that. It's his comment he gave to me.
All right, thank you.
Just for the public, we have to be very careful to say that anybody can raise any safety concern they want with us. But boy, oh boy, you got to raise it with the plant, and if it's appropriate with the NRC, that's the formal and correct channel, separate from what we do, which is important. But we don't have legal obligations here.
Well, I recognize that, but I also recognize that by virtue of the fact that we're in receipt of some of this correspondence, it's essentially in the public record.
Yes. Yes. I was just making the point, in case anybody's watching on television, to say that...
Understand.
I mean, we all understand this, but I'm just saying it. If there's a safety concern, the primary obligation of anybody who has such is to raise it with the plane. Trips over the years, and including one I was on just a few months ago, have evaluated that program, and you can find it in our records, to make sure that it still is functioning properly. I just wanted to reinforce for anybody that's watching how important that is, that nothing go unreported through the right channels, because sometimes one individual has something that no one else knows that has to be raised in that way.
Yes, and we have many vehicles to do that. We've, you know, our corrective action program, which we talked about yesterday, as well as our employee concerns program, and obviously the NRC can be contacted, and that's communicated to the plant staff on many occasions.
Yes, and just again, with the public out there in mind, if it's necessary for someone to seek anonymity because they feel that, that's okay. By the way, anonymity with us too. We will respect that if it's appropriate, although it's always better if you don't feel that's necessary to come out and do it with your name on it, because then it makes a fuller record. Okay. A member of the public has just raised her hand. Will you identify yourself again?
Linda Seeley with the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. I wanted to comment on this. As you know, in the record, there's a letter here that the Mothers for Peace...
Okay. Linda Seeley, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. Concerning this item of safety, as you know, we submitted a letter on April 14th to the NRC concerning the safety culture at Diablo Canyon that we've had, because we have an anonymous line that workers can call. Sometimes they do call us feeling that they can be receive confidentiality in their allegations about the worker culture at Diablo. And as you've said, the channel is to go through the plant, and then if things aren't made proper, that they can go to the NRC. But some of the workers there who have made allegations to us feel that it's not safe for them to go to the employee concerns group.
Not safe meaning in terms of...
In terms of their...
intimidation or their employment?
Right, and their evaluations, their... that their performance evaluations, that kind of thing. And so we did submit a letter to the NRC. On April 14th, we got a letter back from them on May 8th stating that they had... noticed our concerns, and they said that they would give us a reply in about 6 months. Today is exactly 6 months from then. We have not yet received a reply from them, so we'll let you know when we do receive a reply, and I would assume that you'll get a copy of that.
Well, if we get a copy of it in parallel, great, but if we don't, and if you do, then we'll be apprised of it too. There's not much we can do until the NRC at least has their opportunity.
Yes, but I just wanted to let you know that we're watching and waiting. Okay, thank you.
And I'll let you know that we're watching and waiting, too.
No further comments, Bob.
PG&E?
I have no comments.
Anybody else? Sounds like the member in absentia ought to move to adjourn, and then I'm liable to do something with that. Bill, you want to move to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn, and also take the opportunity, Bob, to wish you a rewarding holy day.
Yeah, thank you. I'm driving back to Berkeley. It's the Jewish, the holiest day of the year tomorrow. And thank you for that. And with that, we're going to adjourn the 55th public meeting here. To the public that are watching, you know how to get us on slow span. Or on our website, and the next public meeting is scheduled for February.
Thank you. And I might just mention, as most folks know here locally, this is being carried live on streaming video, so that's how Bill can watch it and possibly pair wherever he may be and other folks. After this, it's then shown on a certain schedule on the local television. So it's not going to be available for Bill down in Arizona to watch it on the TV, because it's shown on the local access channel. And so it's shown a number of times, which is very helpful for folks who've missed it on the computer. Relative to the other issue we talked about in the engineer's comments, we'll go ahead and proceed to prepare that portion of the transcript first so that Pear and Bill have an opportunity to see it. But I just wanted to make
Rob?
Yes.
Did I hear you say that there would be an opportunity for me to go back and listen to the comments that are made by the engineer?
No, I think just the opposite, Bill. It's being shown now on streaming video live, and unless I'm and I could be incorrect, I think they show it then on the local public access TV channel. So I don't know that it's shown on the internet again, but I can check on that.
So I probably can't recover it through SourceBand.
In reality, Rob, it is. I don't know what the delay is in terms of posting it to the internet.
Okay.
But it is available through the SlowSpan website.
All right. So I'm corrected.
Yeah, Rob, when will you receive a DVD on this whole thing?
Yeah, and we'll have a DVD as well.
That would be the best thing to send to them, I think, would be a copy of the DVD so they can look over there.
Especially for our two absent members, Per Peterson and Bill Conway, to actually see that portion would be the most valuable way for them to get the full content of what we heard and what the colloquy was.
But Stan has corrected my understanding that it may well be posted on the website, Bill. So it may be available, and we'll confirm that. That probably makes sense that it would be a link that you could go to the website and view those meetings as well as on the public access channel. So we'll double-check on that and let you know.
Did you say there also was an opportunity for DVD?
Yes.
Maybe you could send me one of those to be able to ensure in my own mind that I'm able to watch this.
Will do.
Thank you.
Yeah, and for Pear also. And besides that colloquy, there was an extended colloquy with public involvement yesterday about, and we'll see you in February, public. I'm about to hop in a car and drive to Berkeley.